The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall. I'm coming to you now from London, the United Kingdom. I'm over here for my summer holidays, and this is episode 430 of the Columbia Calling podcast. We've covered Bogota, we've covered Antonio Nariño, and now we're going to switch over to Medellin, and we've got a very special guest on the show, and he will discuss to us some of the changes and some of the fallacies surrounding Medellin. He is, of course, a native of Medellin. His name is Ander, and he wishes to, well, share with us a little bit about it. And I think this episode will be immensely popular with those people considering visiting Medellin or considering relocating as location-independent professionals. So we'll see. Great conversation coming up. Great conversation. You'll enjoy it immensely. I know you will. A couple of words from our sponsors. The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We're also brought to you by BNB Columbia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Columbia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. Check out the website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Columbia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So check out latinnews.com and bnbcolombia.com. Please support our sponsors. And now we'll go over to the news with Emily Hart and be back with segment 3 with Ander in Medellin. Thank you again. Don't go away. And we're back. This is episode 430 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall. I'm pre-recording this, but I will be coming from London, where I am at the moment. And my very special guest is Ander Agudelo. He is in Medellin at the moment. And we're going to talk about sort of Medellin past and present. We're going to talk about what it's like to grow up there, because he is, as they say, paisa de cepa. So he's born and raised and working, and he's there in Medellin. He's not, you know, coming for a short while and going. He's there. He's got he teaches Spanish, and he does it virtually and in person. So check out on social media, Spanglish 360 Academy. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Perfect. So listen, Ander, welcome on the Columbia Calling podcast, and thank you for agreeing to talk to me.
Well, thank you for having me here.
now, we must mention our mutual friend or contact, Dustin, in the United States, who has been impressing upon me that you have to be on the Columbia Calling podcast because you have so many stories. So, I mean, let's start from the very beginning. And Dustin is a listener, so thank you, Dustin, for putting us in contact. Let's start from the very beginning. We're going to talk about Medellin. And we talk about, you know, people think about Medellin now as a sort of urban regeneration, a success story, in terms of turning around the dark years, or the image of the dark years of the 1980s and early 1990s. Tell us, in your own words, what it was like to grow up in Medellin. Do you remember the dark years?
Okay, so I was born when this guy, Pablo Escobar, he was like, yeah, he passed away. And I mean, after that, I remember that when I was growing up, we used to have these invisible borders during daylight. It was like, I mean, that, I think that's pretty much the thing that I experienced the most, especially because I live in the north of the city, which is usually like the not so good area in the valley. So, we used to be told that, hey, don't go to this neighborhood because they don't allow people to get into their area. If you're not part of their community, so you have to be very careful where you were getting into, especially when you were going to do homework and stuff from school, elementary school, and we used to have these friends in these areas, and we were like, hey, dude, boy, but what happens if I go there? I don't want to get shut down in those places. Like, so there was always that thing in the back of your head that was saying like, oh, is that a safe area? So you had to ask people if that was a safe neighborhood to get into, even if it was during daylight. Because, I mean, that was the hardest part when we were growing up here. Like, I live in Bedia, which is, I don't know if you know this, but in the city, you may think that it's Medellin only, but you have a lot of small cities that are so close to one another that you may think it's Medellin, but it's not Medellin. So it's like probably 5-6 different cities that are so close to one another but they're not Medellin. I mean, 50-60% of it is Medellin, but then the around the city, there are other cities. The city that I live in is Bello.
Yeah.
And I mean, many people, even in Medellin, they don't like it. Because there are many people who are asking for money, like when you're in a restaurant, like when you've got tables outside of a restaurant, you've got these uncomfortable things that they are asking for money. I, to be honest, I don't like it either, but I don't feel unsafe as in like, oh, I'm going to get like robbed, or at least during daylight. Okay. During daylight, I can go anywhere in Medellin. Like I feel safe enough to go whatever. Like actually, sometimes I do Uber to just socialize and meet people and just offer my services, because I do a little bit of everything. And I feel safe. I feel quite safe right now, but that wasn't the case back then. Like, when I was growing up, elementary school, high school, it was a hard no to go to a place that you didn't know. My father used to tell me like, hey, where are you going? I'm going to do this homework. Oh, but what neighborhood is it? Like, where are you going? And I've got to ask if it's safe enough for you to go there, and the times and the people that you're going to be visiting. So, yeah, that was pretty much my experience when I was growing up. You had to be very careful when you were going to certain neighborhoods.
It's hard, though, isn't it, to imagine this? You're a primary school, elementary school, and you're having to, it's like, is it safe for me to go to a companion's neighborhood? And when you talk about invisible frontiers, you're talking about one gang controlling one area and another gang. Are these frontiers, are they in all parts of Bello, or are they just different comunas? Or, I mean, how does it work? Do you remember?
I mean, you could say that it still works. It's just not as unsafe as it was back then. Like, as I'm telling you right now, I can go wherever the fuck I want, and I know I'm nothing special. I mean, it's just common sense. Just don't get into trouble, or just don't think you're going to be an asshole to whoever you run into. It's just common sense. But aside from that, it's quite safe. There are, like these gangs, like they are, I mean, some people know more about this than I do probably, but pretty much is that they sell their whatever in specific neighborhoods. So they know that this gang owns, if you will, certain neighborhoods. So you had to know if these were the enemies of the gang that controlled your area back then. So if they got to know, because they thought that you might, I mean, the way that it was explained to me when I was a kid is that they might think that you were a spy, even if you were a freaking kid, that you might be a spy to see what they were doing and how they could get into the area that they were controlling.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was pretty much it, why it was dangerous, because they thought you were a spy. I mean, like an 8-year-old kid, a spy. It's like,
well, I suppose it's happened. I suppose it's happened for them to see. I mean, that's got to be pretty terrifying. Did they ever approach you as a spy? I mean, because you must have had friends who were involved.
I did, although I never had that experience. The closest experience that I ever had was, I mean, these frontiers were kind of fading away mm-hmm. from the people's mind about 10, 12 years ago. Oh, no, like almost 20 years ago. 20 years ago.
So 2002. So
I remember that I was helping a friend with some work. We were selling stuff at grocery stores, mm-hmm. like some small things to make some money. And again, it was kind of fading away, the idea of invisible frontiers. Mm. So we were like, okay, we know this area is not supposed to be a place to hang around and even to work, but we still took our chance. Mm-hmm. And we got into the area because we knew that we already have friends in that area, and they were, oh no, don't worry, nothing will happen to you during daylight. So we took our chances. We got into there, and I remember that one time we were selling the stuff, and a guy just passed by running, and there was another guy shooting at him, and we immediately came, like, we just ran away and got into the first house that we saw with an open door, and we closed the freaking door. that was the most dangerous thing that I ever encountered while I was growing up, to be honest. But it was still scary. I was like, yeah. That guy is going to, I got, how do you call it? A stray bullet.
Yeah.
So you just don't know. You just don't know. And you don't want to take that chance. So we definitely got into there. When we kind of saw that no one was around, we immediately got out of that neighborhood. We were like, no, fuck it, we're leaving.
You laugh about it today, but I mean, the experience back then, however old you were, must have been, I mean, it's life changing, that kind of thing. I wouldn't go back to that barrio.
No, I didn't go back after so many years, like many, many, many years, probably 10 years passed after that happened to us. So I was like,
yeah. So I'm assuming that this is like one of the stories that you've told Dustin. So that's why he got in touch with me to say, get his stories. Yeah, Anders got loads of stories. But so tell us a little bit more, because, okay, so you had that extreme experience, but Medellin started to change. When would you say there was a change in Medellin for you as a, you know, a youngster in the city?
So I moved about from Bello to Medellin, which is like 1 hour away from one another, when I was 16 years old. And I started studying in the center, downtown. Mm-hmm. I could say that, okay, I finished high school when I was 16. I started learning English, and I started meeting foreigners back then. I was like, I started to meet teachers who were expats in the city. They were, oh no, I'm teaching here, I'm also kind of an expat, I'm experiencing the culture. And that, so that's when it started, like, oh, okay, so other people are interested in coming here. So it starts to, you start to wonder why, like, okay, what's happening here? Like, what are these politicians doing that these people are coming? Because something has to be had to be happening for these to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it got me curious. I started learning English because I loved video games. I mean, from the get. But then, I mean, it was, okay, I need to monetize this. I started teaching English in 2010. And I started meeting more and more foreigners. And in 2013, I started teaching at a university. I had to take an exam, a certification exam, TOEFL, you know about yeah. that. And I started to go to these language exchanges. Mm. So there you actually get to meet a lot of foreigners who want to learn Spanish and just socialize with locals, right? And as a local, you also want to learn English because, I mean, it's not easy for us to just go overseas and learn the language through immersion. It's just not easy. So I was, okay, I figured like, okay, there are three parts of the learning process, and one of them is practice through immersion. So I was okay. I don't need to go abroad, but I will definitely get myself into those situations so I can practice with people who know the language, who are native speakers of the language that I'm learning and I'm supposed to be teaching. Because I was already teaching, but I wasn't confident enough to be like, okay, yeah, I can't talk to anyone. Although I was teaching, I didn't feel that comfortable talking in English, but.
I would say that you should feel comfortable, and so will my listeners, because your English is very clear and very fluid, so you shouldn't worry about it at all. So I'm happy to know that you're teaching English as well, because I have met English teachers who do not speak English. So there you go. In some of like public schools around the country, you're like, oh boy. But so, I mean, when you start, let's say 2013, so we're looking at a few years ago, you started going to these language exchanges, and I guess you start seeing more and more expats, because or travelers or immigrants to Colombia. And what were they saying that they love so much about Medellin and why they wanted to live there? Because for you, it's been your home forever. Perhaps it gave you a different view of your own home and city.
So I have always considered myself an introvert. If you ask me, that's how I consider myself. I've kind of had to learn how to socialize. Mm-hmm. And I started to hear from exes and everybody that I was meeting that, people here are so welcoming. Like mm-hmm. they are so warm when it comes to treating people, because I mean, you're from London, so you know this. Yeah, like people, I mean, I've heard they're so cold, like not like here, definitely not. In the United States as well, I've heard the same stories, like, oh no, people there, like you might have a neighbor for 10 years and you don't know what his name is or her name is. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's like here we do. Like, I mean, even if you're the most introvert person like I am, you do know. Like you've got these conversations and you kind of get you just meet people and it's nice. So I started to appreciate the things that I was taking for granted. So that was one of the things. The other thing that I took for granted so much was the weather. I only started appreciating the weather that we've got here just when I started teaching Spanish, not even just in these events that I was attending when I was teaching English, but when I started, for example, you mentioned this thing about the teachers that are English teachers here in the country, they don't actually know how to speak the language. And that's actually one of the reasons why I didn't know this word reverse engineer back then when I started teaching Spanish 5 years ago. But that's what I was, what I had in my mind. I was like, okay, if I'm supposed to be an English teacher, then I should be able to reverse engineer the same thing that I do in English to teach Spanish. That's basically what I thought. But I wasn't confident enough. I mean, we're speaking about 5 years ago, only 5 years ago. And I remember the first student that I had was from Canada. And I was like, okay, if I can do this, then I know jack shit about English. I'm a shitty teacher. I'm a shitty English teacher. I won't be able to do this. So yeah, I mean like you just don't feel confident enough until you are able to talk to native speakers. It's just what it is. Okay. So yeah.
But you changed, and you know, you changed with the city changing because you had to, let's say, get over your introverted nature to go and talk to foreigners. And I mean, it's a big deal, isn't it?
It was very challenging. So I was thinking about the weather here. That was one of the things that I took for granted so much. And when I started talking to these foreigners, they were like, dude, the weather here is so cool. Then I started kind of Googling, like, okay, why do these people like that? The weather here is a shit. But it's just that I like to call it, we are spoiled. Like we have such a good weather that we are spoiled when it changes. And it doesn't change it. That doesn't change that much. Like once you've got the whole picture of what the weather is like in other places where you've got the four seasons, it's like, oh, we are so freaking spoiled with the weather change here. It's like it just decreases 3 degrees or it goes up 3 degrees and you're just like, oh, fuck it. I can't stand it.
But just imagine you're, I mean, you know, I'm from England and we're the reputation is having bad weather and so on. But imagine you're from Canada. I mean, the winter in somewhere like Calgary at minus 35 degrees, you know, 35 degrees below zero. And you come to Medellin. And so, and you know, that's the sort of thing. I was in Medellin in December of last year, and I was overwhelmed by the amount of, I guess, location independent North Americans mostly. And so they were all in shorts all the time because December, it's the, you know, the worst months anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere, but they're down in Medellin where it's, I guess, 27, 28 degrees every day. You know, even if it rains, it's not cold. And it's a great attraction for them. But let's go back a bit. And you know, you were growing up when you were like 15 or 16, you moved into the city, into Medellin from Bello. Could you feel a change taking place? Could you feel that the ambience of the city was changing? No longer was it like an aggressive or fearsome city.
Well, the fact of being able to see these expats or retirees, I don't know what they were, but I mean, foreigners in general, it just kind of gave you this relief, so to speak, that it was, okay, these people are coming here. Mm. I mean, this is probably becoming safer by the day. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of the back of your head telling you like, oh, I mean, these people come from a place where you've got such a good life quality. And to come here, I mean, to risk your comfort zone. I don't know. I wouldn't do it unless there are some facts that tell me that the place is not dangerous anymore. It may not be as good as it is in developed countries, but it is not bad and it's getting better. So, I mean, probably that was it. That was the point where I was thinking that, okay, yeah, right now maybe the city is actually becoming something else, like not what it used to be, and people and or the politicians, to be more specific, are doing something about it. Like they actually want to bring more people. Like I didn't understand many things back then, but right now it's just like as you're telling me. For example, you won't believe me what I've seen. I've got a friend who retired here 3 years ago. And he's a retiree from the army, I think. And he was telling me that the office, they've got a physical office here in Medellin. Not only that, but they are setting up a physical Spanish school just for the retirees that they are bringing. So not to mention the digital nomads and the other retirees that are coming outside of that kind of space. So yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing that so many people are coming here. And as you were saying, like in Poblado, Laureles, or Envigado, you get to see so many foreigners coming to visit. And once they've got that first experience, it's like, wow, okay, like I can actually live here. Like I can actually live here. I think it's cool. It's not, it's not only not expensive, but it's crazy cheap. It's crazy cheap for someone who comes from a developed country.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very seductive lifestyle, isn't it? And you mentioned like the politicians sort of paying attention to the city or doing the right thing. Do you remember, like, was it the alcaldía of Fajardo or someone before him or someone after him that was the sort of most successful?
I'm very bad with names, to be honest.
That's fine.
Bad with names, but I do think that they are doing their best to bring more people, because I mean it just makes sense. It just makes sense. The more people are coming here to spend their money, I mean, it's going to be better for everybody, not only for expats, because you can do way more, like so much way more, with the same amount of money. You can have like four times the life quality that you had wherever you come from. And for locals, it's also a good deal. Like right now, like I've got five teachers now, and it's just unbelievable that there are all these call centers. They are coming here because it's way cheaper to have staff here than in the United States or whatever. And it's a good deal for locals who are taking these calls from these companies. And it's just like many teachers are just going to these places for call centers because they are actually paying sometimes more than in a teaching position.
Yeah. So call centers, what are the webcams? I know that Medellin is famous.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get someone who's like a webcam actress or performer on, but you know, you'll need to teach them English
like that is the thing, like I haven't met the first one who speaks that good in English.
Oh, but you've met some, you know some.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, it's just like I was talking to an acquaintance a few weeks ago, and I mean it's that is far off. I mean, I know they're making a living, but it's kind of messed up because I mean they are 20-year-old girls, and I mean they are making this amount of money, but they just don't understand that fast money comes with slow problems sometimes. But yeah, it's what it is. Like there's actually a friend that I was teaching Spanish a few years ago, and he told me that the idea is to teach English to some of the webcamers that are working there in some of the studios that they've got. So, but yeah, that is the thing. Like, I haven't met the first one who speaks good English. Like, they barely speak some things.
Yeah, it's been tough. But so I would say, you know, and I don't want to, you know, offend you or anything, but I'd say that is. I realize that it's a one off. But Medellin, is there still a permeation of the kind of narco culture of the 80s and 90s when you know, Pablo Escobar and others were is the city still affected by that kind of culture?
Yeah, I mean, there are this thing, I don't know if you're familiar with the word, which is celadores,
doormen. Yeah.
But it's not that kind.
Okay.
The one that you may think that guards your complex or whatever. It's actually the guys, like when you're in a low area, like low end area, it's not so good. Mm. And these people that still have kind of control of the area, the drugs and stuff, they go door to door. It's not everywhere. It's not everywhere. But they knock door by door. Hey, we're taking care of the neighborhoods. You need to pay us some fee. It can be $1, but it's still fucked up because it's like, I mean, these guys aren't doing shit, and they are probably the ones who steal the motorcycles and the cars that are robbing the area. So,
Well,
that still happens.
That's kind of my point. I think in Bogota, is that a sayayin, or I don't know. I mean, to Medellin, you would call it a celador, but
They come now and you see them. It's not freaking Celador. It's just some random guy who will just stab you when drunk if you don't give him $1 for that weekend. It still happens.
A protection racket, isn't it? I find this side of things so conflicting and so duplicitous because, of course, the guy is calling, trying to charge you, and that happens everywhere. This is not unique to Medellin at all here in Colombia. In the coast where I have businesses and stuff, and they do the gang or the armed group. The armed group puts out the paper with the limpieza social, of the bandits they're going to murder, kill, and the people that owe money, and they talk and they write these horrible pamphlets talking about homosexuals, prostitutes, drug addicts. But the gang is the same gang that provides the drugs. Runs the brothels, steals the cars, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so that's like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's the same guys who are, who are probably stealing the wheels of the cars, who are charging protection. Yeah. And, to charge $1 for a family, so let's say 4,000 pesos, who are informal workers, is a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, when you take into account that the minimum wage in Colombia is probably $250, $300 a month, that is like, and they're not doing shit. Like, I don't care for paying for someone who's actually giving me a service, but that is just some excuse. Like, the last time that I had an experience like this was when COVID hit, 3 months after COVID hit, probably in June 2020 was. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was in this bad area. As I'm telling you, like, I never had issues with those guys. They actually kept the drugs in a rock next to my door or something like that. I don't care. Like, it's their business. I'm kind of the guy that, I don't fuck with you. You don't fuck with me and we're fine. Right. Mm. But then they couldn't charge this protection fee to the people because no one was working. It's like you were here and they couldn't just do it. Many people just didn't have a job, let alone money to pay a protection fee. So I was lucky because 6 months before COVID here, I was already trying to get my school to be online mostly. And COVID just helped me to do that. Because people just couldn't go out and they wanted to be productive in that time. I was doing good. I was partying every weekend while many people weren't even working. So they saw that. And one day when one of my parties was over, they just arrived at my door and they were like, dude, like, you need to pay us $300. Or else we'll kill you by noon. So
like $1,000,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So it was just like that. And the problem was that the house is my father's. So I could have lived, I could have left, but my father would have had the problem that he would have to pay.
Yeah.
So I was like, shit. So, I did pay because I didn't want my father into any trouble or me for that matter. But after 5 days, I was gone. I left the house. I went to a village that also belongs to Medellin. I don't know if you went to Santa Elena when you were here.
I know Santa Elena, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Nice. I went there. It was a place that I wanted to go to and experience how living was over there. So I was like, fuck it, let's just do it.
Yeah.
This must be a sign. So I just left and went to Santa Elena and lived for a year over there. It still happens. Like, some things, like, every now and then you run into these guys who just threaten you just for the sake of it. But
what you said is like they kept the drugs under a rock outside your house. That's pretty terrifying in itself. And then you're a young guy, we all had parties, and as a result of having a party, you had to pay $1 million to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, yeah, exactly. They were, this guy does have money. So, yeah. Okay, yeah. And they waited for other people to go out to leave my house. And as soon as the last person left, the guy was into my house like, hey, come on, we need to talk. I was like.
And did he come with a gun and stuff?
Not with a gun, but I mean, it was kind of like, hey, I mean, like either you pay or you pay. I mean, there was no way out of it. I was like, shit. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. But you know who the person is. I mean, you know who.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I recognize the guy that belonged to the gang and stuff. So it was like, shit.
You're not still, but you're back now in Medellin, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm actually in the same. I mean, again. These kind of things, they happen when you are in a not so good area, kind of more to the low end areas of the city, which I mean, I'm not anymore in one of those areas. I mean, you're familiar with Estratos, which is Estrato 3 right now, which is kind of intermediate, middle class. But if you're, I mean, like Estrato 1 or 2, it's a hard no for anybody. I mean, unless you actually need to come and you've got no place. But if you can afford to be in three estrato on, it's definitely the way to go.
Wow. So I mean, okay, so you're in strato 3 and I'm assuming, I mean, your work is online, but what do you think about the transformation of El Poblado to being like a it's like a mini Europe or a mini North America. What do you feel about that as someone from Medellin? How do you feel this? It's because it's a massive influx of people from outside. Is it too much or is it a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, I definitely think it's a good thing if you are willing as a local to self-improve. One of those things is just learning the language. I mean, if you want to make money, I was talking to my cousin last weekend on Saturday. I was like, dude, you can give these guys haircuts at their houses and they are very willing to pay you very kindly. Like, I can assure you that they will pay you $10, $15 and give you another $10 and $15, just the tip, just because they liked you, just like that. Just like that, because that's kind of the people that I work with here in Medellin usually, and you are like that, like your culture or Americans or Canadians, you are like that. I mean, that's how you were raised, and it's a good thing. But you need to know how to speak the language.
Yes.
The only way for you to be liked by people, especially here, like in this context, is if you speak the language. Like I've got so many acquaintances of friends, they just because I speak English, they, hey, pick me up at the airport. Don't worry about whatever. They just give me $200, $300. If I owe you whatever, just let me know. I'll pay you via PayPal. I mean, money is no problem. With foreigners, is never a problem. I've never had problems about money. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing. A friend of mine, He moved here 3 years ago.
Yeah,
he's from New York. It's kind of a good story. You might want to have him as a guest in the podcast as well, because his parents, they are Colombian, but he was born and raised in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's like an American, but he's got that experience that it's. It's kind of interesting. It's very interesting, to be honest. His name is Vic, and he moved to a town. It's kind of like Santa Elena. I don't know if you went to San Pedro.
I've never been to San Pedro.
No. Okay, so that is a town that is probably 90 minutes away from Bello, the city that I live in, which is 1 hour away from Medellin. And he just loves it. He just loves it. He's investing in real estate, and he tells me, oh no, everything is going to become more expensive, but in the same token, people are going to be able to make more money out of the people that are coming here. So it's like either you self-improve to be able to work with the foreigners, expats, retirees, digital nomads that are coming here, or you've got to live to a town.
because you won't be able to afford to live in the city in 5 years. You just won't.
See, I mean, you know, I always think there can be a healthy middle ground between immigrants mm-hmm. and Colombians, because if all of the Colombians are priced out of Medellin, then you know the culture will get lost. But that's another story altogether. So what do you feel is the future for Medellin now? Because you know that we had, you know, things were pretty grim here in Bogota, and from what I read, things were pretty grim in Medellin during the pandemic. And I guess that set us all back, didn't it? I mean, it kind of put, mm-hmm. although you were working, you were fine. but you know, it's, I think probably the city suffered. Do you think that things are improving once again?
Yeah, this is like right now. Right now is actually the very time when I think that things are starting to look like before, like normal before COVID. But yeah, I mean, many people are just still recovering. They are just recovering. I mean, I hope and I think that things are going to get better, not only in Medellin, but overall in Colombia, because I know many people are just coming. As you were saying, just getting more and more foreigners in the country, and I think it's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing.
I mean, the one thing that still boggles me a little bit is that these elections, you know, we're having elections in a few days. Hopefully things will, if they keep the same way that they are right now, will be good. Mm. but I mean, that's kind of, I don't know much about politics, but hopefully things will keep on improving. Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so, I think.
Well, I like this. This podcast is going out after the election, so we will know who has won, and we will know. But it's nice to hear what you're saying about this. And I hope you go out and vote. Don't tell me who you're voting for. I just want you to go out and vote and tell everybody you know to go out and vote, because if you don't, you know, the majority that does vote, it's within their interests. If they win, you know, and then you can't complain. So I want to thank you, first of all, for all of this. I mean, you've talked about some pretty scary experiences, but you're obviously very, very proud of your city. And that you have created this online Spanish Academy. So Spanish 360 Academy. You can find that all over social media. So for any of my listeners looking to find, you know, online Spanish courses and so on, well, look no further. Anders here, we'll put the links up on Facebook and Twitter and so on. But my co-host on this show, she lives in Medellin. She lives in downtown Medellin, Emily. Mm-hmm. And she's English. When we were talking about Medellin, because sometimes we do a show where we just answer questions from the listeners. When we were talking about, people always ask, Medellin or Bogota? And she was very careful. She was very, very careful, because I said, you know, I live in Bogota. It's for my kids. It's been great. The international schools and the international culture. But what Emily said, which I liked very much, she says, I think that Bogota is a more adult city. How would you feel about that? Is Medellin a more young city, or is Bogota a more adult city? How would you compare the two?
Well, I've only been to Bogota once, if I'm being honest. But there are things that I just don't find in Bogota. It depends on what you are looking for. So I am a man. First of all, weather is a huge deal for me. So rain is a hard no for me. And the second one is women. Like I love women here. So I mean, so it depends. It depends on what the person is looking for. So they must take into account what they want and what they can find in the cities, in these two cities. So I mean, I know many people who like foreigners who don't like Medellin. They just don't. So, yeah, so they go to Bogotá, they go to Cali, and they go to Cartagena, and they like it. For example, in my case, I don't like hot, humid weathers. I don't like Santa Marta. I don't like Cartagena. When I go 2 days and I come back, because that's as much as I can stand from that. I just don't like to be all sweaty and that stuff. And same for Bogota, because it's too cold for me. I just don't like it. I mean, if people are used to living in a cold, I mean, go for it.
Well, very good. I think you just, you know where you want to be, and you understand the culture and the lifestyle, and you clearly, you are, as we would say in Spanish, apropiado, you have appropriated Medellin. It is your home. And the culture is different to that in Bogota, and vice versa. So wherever you feel more comfortable. So just remind us quickly, Ander, where can we find your Spanish classes? Tell everybody.
Well, on Google, you can find me as Spanglish 360 Academy, or on social media, Instagram or Facebook, same thing, Spanglish 360 Academy. And on YouTube, if you want to know more about Spanish, free lessons, more than 300 lessons pre-recorded as well like this. I mean, you can also go check them out. So same thing, Spanglish 360 Academy. You can find me there. Those lessons were pre-recorded by me, although right now I've got a team of teachers. So, I mean, that's how you can get to me.
And a quick question. I know I'll ask. How much do you charge?
Oh, me? $79 a month right now for this recording.
$79 a month. Well, that's incredibly
10 cheap. Hours.
10 hours.
Yeah, it's 10 hours one-on-one. We try to have a conversation club every week. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I want people to learn.
That's $7.90 an hour.
You could say that.
Yeah, it's not very much. But anyway, I'm not going to tell you to increase. You know that. But anyway, listen, Ander, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing the stories about growing up in Medellin, some of which are kind of terrifying, and others of which are just like, this is great. I like to hear from a local guy talking about his city. So thank you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you for having me here.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. We've been talking to Ander Agudelo, who's there in Medellin. Check out Spanglish 360 Academy. Just put it into Google. You'll find everything there. So we've been talking to Ander there in Medellin. I've been Richard McColl, recording in Bogota, broadcasting from London at the moment. Thank you for listening, and we'll go over to some messages from our sponsors just now. This episode was brought to you by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean. Since 1967, their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. And also, our other sponsor is BNB Colombia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. Check out the website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Colombia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So that's bnbcolombia.com and, of course, latinnews.com. Thank you for everyone for listening. That's us. Farewell. And, of course, check back next week. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.